Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you all for coming. We've got a fairly lengthy agenda, so we're going to get started. The record, my name is George Gattis, and I'm filling in today for the Chairman of the State Workforce Innovation Board. Some quick notes as we begin the meeting. The meeting is being recorded. Before speaking, please state your name so the transcription service can accurately document today's meeting. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the board. It's open to the public. We'll be running a manner compliant with RSA 91-A. Meeting materials for the board and the public can be found at visiting the Department of Business and have a checking up on ATS website. We've got a number of items to work through today. You can find these items on the agenda with their proposed supportive documents. The agenda and these documents have been provided to the board electronically. Printed copies are available today, and all materials are available to the public via the VA website. Joe, would you like to begin the roll call for the meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Albert.
Here.
Jim Alden.
Here.
Joseph Alexander. Stephanie Ashworth. Kevin Abard. Rick Bartle. Here. Alan, can you help me with your last name?
Sorry, it's the tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just say Blue.
Blue. Alan Blue.
Yeah,
thank you, Alan. Christine Brennan. Anya Brzezinski. Paul Callahan. Kelly Clark. Kenneth Clinton.
Here.
George Capatos.
Present.
Mary Crowley. Tyler Eaton. Patrick Fall. James Jerry. Chase Hageman.
Here.
Michael Kane. Shane Long.
Here.
Donnelly Lozo.
Yes.
Lori Ann Lundgren. Larry Major.
Here.
Ashok Patel. Tracy Pelton.
Present.
Jim Prue.
Here.
Shannon Reed. Jay Rue. Richard Sala. Tim Sink.
Here.
Gary Thomas. Colin Tiernan.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, with the roll call concluded, we have more than a quorum.
Super, super, okay. The meeting minutes for the March meeting are found in the packet. Any errors, corrections, omissions? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Jim approves.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Real fast, so the motion made by Jim Prue,
yes,
and seconded by Donald Lozo.
Again, welcome everyone. We'd like to take a moment to see if anyone from the public would like to provide a public comment. If so, please state your name for the record prior to speaking. Give a moment and please provide you information items section two.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So item 2A is something that we do every 2 years. We have a participant panel. We just asked that if board members start thinking of some questions. This session is going to be led by both Lisa Gerard and Melissa Salmon. And I think we have some microphones for them as well. Do you mind taking them away, Melissa and Lisa?
So the participant panel is in front of you, and we're just going to go down the line. They do have a microphone, so hopefully you'll be able to hear them. They're going to give you a little bit about who they are and how they came to be part of our Title I programs. And then Melissa and myself are going to ask the panel some questions. And then we'll turn it over to the board members to ask any additional questions you might have. So Abo is going to take it over.
Yes. Hi, my name is Abo.
Would you like to know first?
Just about yourself and how you came to
be. I first heard about my term program when I was in serious trouble and facing charges in both New Hampshire and Massachusetts. Around that time, Allie, my term, was trying to reach out to me and my friends. Honestly, I thought she might have been in law enforcement or something. So I kept ducking her, but she didn't give up, evenly when I had to come to court in NH. Allie showed up with T and Jocelyn. That was the first time I actually saw someone in my corner. In And that's how I got involved, and she helped me. So I realize, what else? I love myself, right?
That's okay.
Thank you. She got me into the young adult program. Before joining MyTerm, I didn't have a career for my future. I worked hard in warehouses, landscaping, just to make it ends meet. But I didn't really think I had a real career. With MyTerm, that I learned becoming an electrician. They guided me through the right path, showed me how I can move up, and now I'm finishing my second year in the apprenticeship. That support helped me see that I could build something for my future and show me I have a goal of my own to own my own electricity company one day.
Living out of my car and just moved back to New Hampshire from Vermont. When I was younger, I was raised in a very strict religious family that strongly discouraged any secondhand or secondary education. So I didn't really know how to apply to college or for scholarships or really where I wanted to start my career path in life. So that also, when I left that as well, that there was no familial support. And then I found MyTerm, and they helped me choose a career path. They helped me figure out how to apply for assistance. They essentially helped me just figure out how to be an adult on my own. While I kind of like helped guide myself as well, they were a really strong guiding hand in that process of figuring out where I wanted to go with my life. And I don't really know necessarily where I'd be without Michelle and MyTerm. They gave me a lot of opportunities to get my foot in the door for a career path and to continue my education. And that was something that was very important to me because at the time I felt very lost, didn't know what I wanted to do. And Michelle helped me get my LNA license. She also helped me get through EMT school at New England Institute for EMS in Manchester. And just recently, I also graduated from a phlebotomy course, which I passed as well. And she really helped me figure out that healthcare was something that's very important to me, and helping people who may not be able to assist themselves or may not have the means to do so is something that is very important to me, and I really appreciate them helping me figure that out.
Hi, I'm Mark Williams. I got laid off after about 20 years in a tech field, and that was my second layoff in my career, and I think it hit me harder than the first, but it hit me pretty hard. So I finally managed to get myself around to New Hampshire Employment Services and start getting involved there. They basically, and was such a great help, Ann Martin. What we did was, you know, she looked at what do I want to do now? And I wanted to get into data analytics. I had tried to start getting into it before I was laid off. And so what happened was Ann got me into a couple of different courses. One of them was the WIOA, you know, workforce. And I'm a techie, so this is kind of unusual for me to be talking to people. I've done it before, but it's not usual. She got me into, the Dislocated Worker Program, And then she really wanted me to take the Workforce New Hampshire, the Work Ready New Hampshire course, which helps doing kind of something like this, speaking to people, which I took, as well as she got me into the Data Analytics Certified Professional Program with Visible Edge Institute, and that's the federal program. And that was awesome. And what happened was, when I went to interview, the second interview I had, they were really impressed by that, by all the certifications that I got. And I guess I did well with, you know, Work Ready New Hampshire speaking to them as well, because I wasn't aware there was going to be a panel there for an interview. So it was kind of like a little bit of interesting. And the other interesting fact is that it's an HES. I worked in Elmy over at 45 South Fruit Street. So, and Marlon got me into a real good place. I've never worked in the state before. I've never worked in government before, and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm real happy to be here to tell you how good this was for me. Thank you.
I'm Kirsten Duff, and Ann Martin took care of me also. Did a great job. I was in the dislocated worker program also. So that I was a programmer before kids. About a few years back, my husband passed away, their dad, so everything kind of went south at that point. Lost a house, lost, you know, a lot of everything. So we struggled to get back on our feet. And I did pretty well for a while there, got back into programming, and then came the layoffs. I was in the first round of the layoffs, along with the Amazon news and so forth. and the whole department, all the work was moved to Germany, because I speak German also. But I didn't want to go back, go live there again. So, Anne got me also into Visible Edge, and I did the Data Science and Machine Learning program here. And they hired me because I was speedy, and they thought I would do a good job teaching. So I assumed the Data Science, Machine Learning, the Data Analytics, and Software Engineering and AI Technologies programs there, and I am happily taking care of more students like we were years back. And I think that's it for me.
Hi everyone, my name is Yulia. I'm 23 years old and I live in Nashua, New Hampshire. I've always lived in New Hampshire, but I recently moved back from Southern Florida about 2 years ago with my four-year-old daughter. After moving back, I knew that I wanted to start some sort of career, something that would be flexible for me and my daughter, and I would be able to turn into a business of my own one day. Massage therapy was always something that I thought of, but I wasn't exactly sure how to get into it or where to start. After doing some research and finding some schools, I was then faced with the challenge of how was I going to pay for this, as well as be a mom, and doing classes and providing for her. My mom was actually the one who referred me to the WIOA program. I was able to apply and do the whole onboarding process remotely. It took about a month or so to do the paperwork and do all the requirements, finding a school that would fit my needs. I toured two of the schools in Manchester and ended up at Northeastern Institute of Whole Health. And after a very long year, I am now a full-time licensed massage therapist in Maine as well as New Hampshire, and I hope to own my own business one day.
Hi, my name is Jasmine. I'm 17 years old. I was born and raised in Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm a senior at Memorial High School. I'm a member of JAG at Memorial, and I'm enlisted in the Army National Guard and will be shipping out this year, June 30th, to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. I've recently received a promotion and I'm now private second class. And I joined JAG because my friend Isabel referred me I've been a part of the program for 2 years and she recommended it to me. And yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Isabel and I'm a senior at Memorial High School and I'm a member of JAG at Memorial. JAG has helped me in so many ways. I've always wanted to do acting, but I never really thought it was, I didn't think I was capable enough. But with JAG, I have realized that I am capable of it, and no matter what, I can put my mind to anything. And they have helped me to come out of my shell and practice public speaking by attending classes at the Palace Theater. I needed help with my academics. I was in danger of flunking out, and Miss Gates has helped me with my classes and stay on top of all my work. Our field trips have helped me learn more about our community and drugs available in our area, and I just want to say JAG is amazing, and I'm thankful that I have met her and the program, so thank you guys.
Okay, so we have a few questions for the panel. So this is first going to go to Isabel. Can you tell the board a little bit more about how you became involved with JAG at Memorial? So our two individuals, Jazz and Isabel, are our in-school youth. So we have in-school youth programming, and these are two representatives of in-school youth at Memorial. So just tell us a little bit more about how you became involved with the JAG program.
Right. So I ended up losing like my older cousin and my freshman year of high school, so I was already kind of feeling down. And then in my sophomore year, I lost my little brother. So then I was really not doing the best with my classes at all. And my guidance counselor at school, she referred me to JAG and thought maybe it would help me come out of my shell. You know. Get more opportunities in life with my career that I wanted to do. And I didn't really have anything else other than acting because that's what I wanted to do. And Ms. Gates has helped me a lot. And my grants counselor decided to recommend it to me because it would help my needs and help me with my career that I want to do. And she introduced me to Ms. Gates, who agreed I would be a good fit and helped me fill all the paperwork to join.
So, thank you. Kirsten, I'm going to ask you the same question. Can you tell the board a little bit more about how you became involved with the Dislocated Worker Program? I think you kind of explained it, but yeah. How did you first hear about the program?
I was starting and stopping different programs because I tend to be interested in a lot of different things, but it's not helpful if you start and stop. So I got into all kinds of other things, like legal, but none of it went anywhere. So I needed some guidance, and provided that and got me pointed into a direction that updates my skills from where I was. Being a programmer in a language that was becoming not used very much, and that was part of the problem. I was not finding another position like the one before, so he pointed me in the direction of data science and artificial intelligence and so forth, and that worked out for me.
Thank you very much. Pass it to Melissa.
Yulia, if you could tell us a little bit more about what types of services you received. I know you talked a little bit about the training, but if you could talk about who did the training for you, what kind of services you received, and if there were any supportive services involved.
So Nicole was my career navigator. She was really nice. She always reached out to me, make sure I was on track with schooling. They were able to pay for most of the tuition, and then NH Work now was the pay for the other half. they reimbursed me for mileage, so to and from school weekly. I was able to get a check every week to put in my gas tank, which also helped out a lot. They paid for my cell phone bill at times. If I wanted to send that in, they were able to help pay for that, which also helped. So I had more money to do other things or like, to pay daycare. A huge thing was that I couldn't find a good fit for my daughter for a daycare, and they were able to connect me with a place that helped me get her into a really good school that she is still now in. She loves it, so that was a really big help. And I believe that's it.
That's great. Thank you so much. And Abo, I kind of have the same question for you. What kind of services did you receive? Did you attend a training? I know you're still in training, so if you could tell us a little bit about that, how that's going, and if you received any supportive services.
I go to the Manchester, call it mechanic school, trades school, and they helped me get in there. They paid for my tools, got me rides there if I have to, if I needed. They supported me, and they really just believed in me and said that I could do this, and I got a bright future. I just got to keep going.
How long do you have left?
I got about 2 more years, a year and a half.
Awesome.
Then I'll get my master's.
All right, Mark, this one is for you. Did you know what career you wanted to pursue? You came in at the dislocated worker program, so you were probably trying to upskill some of your certifications. But how did your counselor help you through this process?
Yeah, thanks. It was one of those things where I knew I wanted to get into data analytics, and it was interesting because I couldn't find that specific job, description in the system. So we had to kind of figure it out, and it was good. Martin was the one that kind of directed everything that way, you know. She got me the program for Visible Edge Institute, got me into that, and that was the data analytics program. And I didn't say it when I was explaining, but I ended up in the Economic and Labor Market Information Bureau, ELMI, as a labor market analyst too. So it was a great course because I think I said that they looked at it in the interview. They looked at the listing of all the courses and the certifications that I got, and they were real impressed. And that was all Ann directing and saying, you've got to do this, and you really want to be in, the Work Ready New Hampshire and all that. So it was, everything was really good. So. Yeah.
Sid, I'm going to you next with the same question. So you kind of had an idea of you wanted to get into healthcare, but you also were doing LNA, you did some phlebotomy now, and you did EMT, which is kind of a great bundle to have. So how did that kind of come about?
So when I first went to Michelle at my turn, like you said, I had kind of an idea. I was at the time working for an in-home healthcare company, so I travel and take care of older residents in their own homes, and I enjoyed it very much, but I wanted more from that, and so Michelle kind of helped me narrow things down. And at the time, one of my biggest issues was I was living out of my car, so we actually found a dementia care facility in Durham, New Hampshire. And the owner had also built a bunch of tiny homes for affordable housing, and the employees got a discounted rate on the rent as well. So I had gotten in at the dementia care facility, and which also gave me housing. And from there, I went and got my LNA to further my career at the dementia care facility. And later on decided I still wanted to go further because I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I enjoyed learning more, whether or not it was going to be something that I wanted to make my career or not. I just enjoyed learning. And Michelle really kind of helped me wade through those waters to figure out what exactly I did want to do and make it a bit easier to make those choices.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to turn it over to Jazzy. Thank you, guys. So I know that you're a senior.
Yeah.
All right. So what was the biggest benefit that the program offered you, and how did it help you to achieve your goals?
So Drive helped me a lot with keeping track of my schoolwork. I'm always the type to, I stay on track, but sometimes I can get off. Like, there's periods that I don't stay on track. So Drive definitely helped me stay on top of my schoolwork and also graduate on time. And Ms. Gates actually helped me a lot with doing my ASVAB, practicing my ASVAB, because it was very different. There's a lot of different topics that I did not know anything about. So she allowed me to study, and she's always helped me. She's always made sure that I was on track with studying, because she knows like the time that I would go in to go for testing. And she helped me get accepted into the Army National Guard, so it benefited me a lot, definitely. And she also helped me understand the cost of living and how to be an adult, and prepare me for life after college. So, yeah.
Excellent. So now we'd like to open it up to the board to ask some questions that might not have been answered. So please go ahead and raise your hands, and we'll get your microphone if you need it. We'll get to you right after Tracy.
Chase Hagman. Lisa, I don't know how I feel about you singling me out just right.
You were going to raise your hand.
Your stories are all incredible. Like, I'm just sort of sitting back here in awe, and great questions were asked. I'm actually having a hard time finding a good question, but we've talked a lot about the successes and the benefits of the programs and organizations you've been involved with. I guess from like a board perspective, it would also be helpful to know if there are things that we can help improve upon, you know, to make the experience better, connect you with an additional resource, you know, things you noticed along the way that were great, but, you know, so is there any other examples of that? And the answer can be no. I'm just curious if there's ways that we can help improve the program.
Does any of the panel want to try to answer that question?
I feel like JAG, as of right now, it is a good, great program. I don't really think there's anything that there should be changes to it, just because it does so much for all the students or just anybody that is in the program. I think it's perfect.
Oh, no, please do.
Well, a lot of times my case manager Michelle and I will joke that I'm kind of her guinea pig lab rat with a lot of stuff. So we've definitely worked together a lot on figuring out how like the best route and best path to get me to where I need to be. And sometimes that could be a little frustrating for both of us. But I think my turn did a really good job of working with the participants, and even when things didn't necessarily go as planned, it was still they still did their very best and absolute hardest to make sure that I got to where I needed to be.
I think that the follow-up is incredible. I might not look at I might not act it, but I am a little long in the tooth. And when my second interview came through with a job, you know, it's testament to the system, you know, that you have and the program. Because the first time I got laid off, it was not a good experience. But this was an awesome experience. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
We have one question from Tracy.
Hi, Tracy Pelton. Thank you for all your stories. Those were amazing. My question to all of you is, how could we have connected you sooner with the programs that we offer? And how did you find the programs? Like, and would you wish you had found it sooner in life?
I definitely wish I'd found it sooner in life. I think I started with my turn when I was 19, almost 20 maybe. And I didn't even know that programs like this existed at all. Not just for younger adults, but also for adults as well. I wish I had definitely found it sooner. It seems like it was almost very hard to hear about it unless you knew somebody in the program. I definitely, I feel like it should, you know, I think it should be broadcasted a little bit louder that, you know, because there's so many kids and young adults out there that are struggling so hard right now. A lot of my friends are, and most of them don't even know that programs like this exist. So I definitely think it needs to be maybe a little more publicized or broadcasted a bit more.
I had been in the JAG program for like a few years now, so I have been in there since I was like maybe late sophomore. I really do wish that I had had JAG before, because it would have helped me through high school, through the whole thing. And I wish JAG was more announced. I wish more people knew about it, because like she said too, I didn't even know about JAG until my guidance counselor told me. And now that I know about it, I tell everybody about it. I've told her about it because it's such a good program, and I wish more people got the chance that I got with JAG. So.
Donnelly Roosevelt, I just, first of all, thank you for sharing your story. It's not easy, and you're all lined up for us all to look at you. Did a great job sharing your stories. And Tracy's question is a very important question, because sometimes no matter how much you advertise, it might not be in the right place for the people that need it the most. So word of mouth is always the best. But I want to ask a question about what's next, in the sense of, so throughout all of your experiences, you've talked about the folks that supported you and helped you find your path. Do you feel like you learned enough through that experience that as you move forward in your respective careers, that you feel like when you hit those bumps in the road or that barrier, that you feel like you have the skills to overcome them? I think that that's an important kind of next part of your world.
I would definitely agree that I don't think I would have any of the knowledge that I have now if I didn't find my turn. You know, there were times that there were things that my turn couldn't help me with, but my case manager still went with me to the dealership to go finance my car because she wanted to make sure I didn't get ripped off or whatever. But in that process, she never just took over the situation and did everything for me. She walked me through everything, every step that I needed to do, every possible outcome that could occur. And so I feel like I have been very well prepared for an adult life on my own. And there's been situations very recently that, looking back, I went, wow, I don't think I would have been able to handle this like I did maybe 2 years ago if I hadn't been with my turn.
I definitely overcome a lot. 2 years ago, I probably would have never sat here and talked to you guys. I would have been shy, scared, something. And Allie and them helped me out a lot. Alright? I just had to say that, because 2 years ago, I would have not walked in here.
So as I said before, I've always wanted to do acting, but I was so shy. I wouldn't be able to be sitting here talking to anybody right now either. But JAG has helped me with that, and JAG has helped me with my future. I always got told that like acting wouldn't be as successful as it usually is when you see in movies or anything like that. But JAG has helped me push myself to my limit and to know that I can do acting, and that is my future, and that's what I want to do.
When I first started the WIOA program and first started school, I was living with my mom, and my daughter and my little brother in a very small apartment. After now, since completing school and completing the program and everything, I'm a full-time therapist and I'm able to afford all my bills by myself, as well as rent, as well as my car, you know, how expensive everything is right now. So I think they really set me up for a good future for me and my daughter, and I'm very excited to see what else will come.
The main thing is that if something like this happens again for me, I won't know what to do right away. And I appreciate all the help that I got, and I know how to use it, and it's been right on target to help me weather anything that comes along.
Hi, Jim Prue. Great program presentation, outstanding work, everybody. My question is, if you find yourself someday underemployed, which of all those wonderful programs would be the one that would support you if you find yourself underemployed? And that would also include maybe the people that we know that might be underemployed. What is that? What would the best resource for something like that be, or what do you think that is for you going forward? Any other questions, anybody?
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Can you elaborate just on what you mean by underemployed,
please? Say, Fung, you want to become an RN. You want to do those other things that you hadn't done yet, and you were maybe working professionally as an LN, mm-hmm. and you wanted to get to that next level. That would be a situation where you feel like maybe you're underemployed.
Okay.
So what would the resource be for that?
No, I'm sure there's other programs out there. My term, I do believe, is 18 to 24, so I'm kind of aged out of that at this point. I do feel like they have, you know, provided me with like a good knowledge basis. You know, if I were to find myself in that situation, I feel like I would know the next steps to take as to maybe I could speak to my employer, see if they would maybe pay for those classes, if they would, help me progress and further my career to be employed by them. If not, I do know that there are other adult programs, like WIOA?
No.
Yeah. I've heard good things about that one. So.
Hi, Jim Alden. I heard about JAG and My Turn several times. How fortunate you were to find it. I just could you expand a little bit on how you found it? I know word of mouth, but who, by whom was it referred, things like that.
So my guidance counselor in my high school, she referred me to JAG because I was just at that place at the time, and she figured JAG would help me with my life and how I could manage to what I want to do with my life, with my job, my career. And I guess with me being in the program for a few years, I've experienced like a lot of stuff with the program. We went on field trips to like colleges and stuff, and it's helped a lot. It's opened my eyes with everything. I've even went on field trips that didn't really have to correlate with my job, but I still wanted to, you know, explore everything because JAG had all those opportunities, so I wanted to take the opportunities to do so.
Colin Tiernan. So my first time here, so I'm new just like you guys, and I thought you did a great job, so kudos. I'm also a Marine, so I'd love to thank you guys for your service preemptively. It's going to be a great experience for you. What I was kind of curious about, maybe I missed this a little bit, but is there any attraction from any of you all, or are you guys interested in state service after this, the state of New Hampshire? Is this something that's inspired you to get more involved, or do you have jobs lined up with the state of New Hampshire?
I'm Mark. I'm employed by NHES, and I had never been employed by a government before, and I'm really enjoying being employed by the state. There's a lot of perks, there's a lot of things that I had not seen from the private sector, I really do enjoy it. So, if you can, you know, there's always that. But I really do.
I'm open to it.
Okay, one more, and then
yeah, Larry Major. This one's for about. I'm glad 2 years has passed so you can be here to talk to us. But my question is, did you know that you wanted to get into electrical? Look, could it have been welding or HVAC?
No.
Did you have to kind of experiment?
I didn't really even actually know what I wanted to do at first. We tried a couple of things. I tried to get a CDL license. I was like, maybe not. And then she told me to try electrician. I didn't want to do it at first. And she was like, give it a shot. I was like, no, I don't even know nothing about tools at first. And then I gave it a shot, I went to class, and then she got me a job with somebody she knows. And then I just started liking it. I really enjoyed it, and I like it.
Well, welcome to the trade.
Thank you.
Yeah, and
George
Patterson, I just want to extend my thanks to all of you as well. Great, but Mark is, you know, it's real near about why it was like, phew, wasn't a good one. It wasn't bad. But I mean, what could be better? You're, you know, we're facing you, and your counselors and all are behind you, facing you from the back, so everything's covered. But I want to thank you all for sharing your success stories, and, you know, we wish you all the best, and we hope you just build upon the successes you've experienced today, and best wishes to each and every one of you in the future. But for on our end, from the board, I mean, this is what it's all about, you know, being able to listen to these success stories, because that's why we're all here, is to make a better world for everybody. So, again, I want to just thank you for sharing, you did a great job, you spoke well, everybody's happy. So, thanks again, and we'll just move on with the informational items now.
Absolutely, and thank you all. I mean,
you do see the row behind the panel. If you all could stand. These are all either career navigators or program managers from the Title I programs. These are the people that make it happen. So we just want to recognize you all.
Has documented 29 rapid response events across New Hampshire. These events include full team rapid response presentations, visits to individual locations with distribution of pertinent material, and on-site discussions with company management to discuss the advantages of rapid response programs and what we can provide. The number of rapid responses for the program year are 36% less than program year 23. So we've done 29 this year versus 45 in program year 23. The rapid response activities covered or impacted 704 employees in the field of distribution, hospitality, logistics, manufacturing, and retail. Of the 29 rapid response events, 18 of these were in person, where we went out and spoke with the employees at the facility individually. and had, and with 10 being full team presentations between all the rapid response team, health and human services, adult education, vocational rehab, employment security. Seasonally adjusted estimates for April 2025, the latest figures we have placed a number of employed residents at 752,990, a small decrease of 690 from the previous month, and an increase of 2,770 from April of 2024. The number of unemployed residents increased by 380 over the month to 24,170. This is an increase of 5,400 more unemployed than in April 2024. There's also a decrease in the total labor force between March 2025 and April 2025 of approximately 310 people. Nationally, the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for April 2025 was 4.2%, unchanged from the March rate, an increase of 0.3 percentage points from the April 2024 rate. Since taking over the Rapid Response Program in January of 25, we've worked to build a cohesive team between New Hampshire Works partners to have a consistency in our presentations, provide rapid response services in an understandable, useful, and professional manner. We've been building adaptability into the current system to manage all situations that may be encountered with a consistent outcome. And one of the things I wanted to bring up was recently, as of Friday, we were notified of the Job Corps program being paused, as they said, and it impacted 250 students and 125 staff members in the Manchester facility. So between Friday morning and Monday at 1 p.m., we were able to gather all of our team and go in and present resources that are affecting students. Many of them live on campus and had no housing to go to. They were supposed to be out by this coming Friday. I believe that's been extended for an additional week. So we were able to bring in people to help them talk about what's available for housing, what's available for healthcare, what's available for continuing their education and the different programs. The military was there also talking about the options there. We were going back on, actually tomorrow we'll having two rapid responses for the staff. There's 125 staff members that will be out of job as of possibly this Friday, or they will be paused as of this Friday. So thank you. That's the update on the rapid response program. Any questions?
Sure.
How did I know?
Jay Sagerman. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate the update. I guess the question I have for you and Joe are a little off to answer. There were roughly 40 students that were going to be potentially homeless. And I guess the question I have is, what are we actually able to present in terms of options for housing for that on such short notice?
We had the City of Manchester and Waypoint coming in. Waypoint was taking all their documents, all the information they could, and see where they could place them. Waypoint specializes in helping homeless teens or children, youth up to through, I think, age 24. So they were the kind of the focus on that.
And so for the record, Joe Dorian, sorry, I stepped out to take a call exactly about that. So the process is ongoing. So I'm sure Nick covered, you know, there's about approximately 250 students who will be impacted by this, 40 of which are have been shared with us, are currently homeless and are facing. So there's some conversations that we can't share publicly. There's some stuff happening behind the scenes. Some positive momentum has been the original closure for those students was supposed to be this Friday. We've got an extension to the 13th, which is great. You know, and then USDOL is potentially looking at extending that even further for the individuals who are homeless until maybe the 30th when the operations have to fully cease. There are some background conversations going on of how to serve those folks, but I'm sorry I'm repeating something, but the student resource fair we had yesterday, we had a really good showing and some real positive, we were talking to the students before, during, and after, so we are connecting them to the resources, but it will be on site tomorrow for the rapid response, and we plan on pulling Senator Director Stephanie Ashworth aside, who couldn't be here today. She's a member of the board for obvious reasons. So ongoing. Sorry if I repeated myself. Here.
That's fine.
Or any
George Cadenas for Rick. I just want to extend my thanks to PEA and all the partner agencies. To have that short a time span to put an event like that together and have, as you know, just about basically all the students there, plus all the resources. I mean, you're talking Friday, and then it's a weekend, and then Monday you're all there. I mean, you did an outstanding job, and I can't thank you enough on behalf of all the partner agencies as well.
Item 2C, we'll kick it over to Melissa Carr. Fiscal update.
Which, there's a little lag in it because it's by the end of the third quarter. Now we're in June. But as it's explained, every time we're awarded a grant, we have 3 years to use all the funds. 80% have to be obligated by the end of the first year. We've expended all of the funds from program year 22, which is what we want. And we're about 97% obligated with program year 23, so running short there. And then we've already exceeded the obligation rate for program year 24, so we're ahead of the game, which is good. It shows that our subrecipients are all doing the best that they can and exceeding expectations, but it means we're shorter on funds than we have been in the past, so we have to be a little bit tighter on budget. We're still waiting on the next program year to see what we're going to get, and we're just going to be optimistic that hopefully it's semi-close to what we've been given. Any questions?
Rick Bartle for the record. I'm just trying to make sense of the math. So for 24, 1.955, didn't get here, that's 33% expended with the remaining of 494.
That doesn't cut the rate to 33%? Am I misunderstanding what I'm reading?
I don't have my computer open. It's all a formula-based spreadsheet, one okay. from the different grants. So I would have to do that.
Okay, it could just be a typo.
It could be a typo.
That's why I make sure. Yeah. But 1.955 of the fiscal year 24 has been expended.
Yeah.
I think it might be the way to say it. Sorry, Chase said it.
Right. Yep.
It says that the grant had 1.9 expended, which is 30. You're right. No, that might.
That's not 30%. Yeah. it doesn't matter. I just wanted to make sure that either if there was a language issue or if there was a number issue. But it looks like if that is the actual expenditure at this point, it's on track for that first year.
Lisa Gerard, for the record, I'll jump in. It's not only what has been expended, but obligated. So if we have an obligation, that is added into it as well. So right now, we're about 92% obligated and expended. So it's both of those categories combined. So if we have an obligation, it's added in as well.
Okay. Item 2D is a performance update. Lisa Gerard.
Lisa Gerard for the record. So we just finished program year 24, quarter three. We are in the last month of quarter four, so we'll have year-end and performance data in your October meeting. But basically, we look like we're pretty much on target to meet or exceed performance measures under VOA Title I, our adult dislocated worker and youth. We've struggled over the last few years to bring up some of these measures. Measurable skill gains is one of those, and credentials is the other. And I think all the work is finally coming to fruition. So I do not believe that we will fail any of the measures that we currently are obligated to meet. If you have any questions about the current performance measures, I can try to answer them as well.
Any questions?
Item 2B, every board packet, we always put in success stories. So some other folks that you can read about in our different programs. Happy to entertain any questions that you may have on any of the program success stories.
questions, everybody?
I don't have, this is Lisa Gerard for the record. I don't have a question, but I missed my opportunity to introduce to the board a new member of OO. This is Melody Crockett. She is a new part-time person at OO, only about about a month or so. She's going to help us with some data, different kinds of things that can help Melissa and myself take some of those things off our plates. And give us more time to do other things that are under our job descriptions as well. So we're very thankful and happy to have Melody here. She came from DHHS. I worked with her for many years in child support, so we're very happy to have her on our team.
I worked for DHHS for 33 years, 32 of which was with child support. I retired in 2018 to move to Colorado to be with my kids and grandchild, and although I love them very much, New Hampshire's home. and one moved to Florida and one came back. So I did a short stint with Department of Safety before I came to OWA. And I'm happy to be back. I always enjoyed working for the state. And like I said, I did work with Lisa for a while. We were a great team. So it made it a little bit more comfortable coming into this position, knowing somebody. And it's a great group. I love them all already. They're just wonderful to work with. So I'm happy to be here.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Office.
Yeah, they paid me. No.
After, no.
No, sorry.
Item 2F. We have some new board members here today. Last year was the first year we did the New Hampshire Works Conference in 2018. So it is now becoming an annual event because we're going 2 years in a row. So we still don't have our triple crown yet, but that'll be next year after we get it done. So we want to make sure that the board knows about it. Mark it in your calendars if you'd like to attend. More information coming your way, but it's happening. Very excited. Friday, October 17th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. with an agenda and all that. We're actually way ahead of the game in terms of planning. We're going to be doing a call for presenters very soon. So if you'd like to present, Kelly Clark last year, who's a board member, actually presented, which was great. Chase Hageman was on a panel for us. So at some point, this is an invitation, if you're interested, we'll do a call for presenters, but some of you will probably be voluntold, so look out for an email from us on that, but please mark that in your calendar. We are requesting some volunteers, including the award selection committee. So one thing that the feds mentioned years ago was the lack of training that we were doing, and we agree, I mean, COVID happens, and we couldn't really do a whole lot of training because everything was upside down. So as soon as it kind of calmed down, we put everything together in terms of training throughout the year, but we really wanted to get the conference back, so here it is. But another aspect that we really want to focus on was better acknowledging service. We have a lot of really exemplary employees throughout the whole New Hampshire Works network. So it's not only BEA, NHES, it's Department of Ed, it's DHHS, it's community college system, it's CAPHR, it's a whole bunch of other folks, my turn JAG, everybody that really kind of pulled together to get the work done. So we are looking for 3 members to join an award selection committee. So we actually, Sarah Wheeler, who's here, put together a great, our partner from Department of Education, put together a great rubric. So we're ready to go. We just need volunteers. So if you're interested in serving on an award selection committee, we will be meeting on October 6th. So if you're free on October 6th, we'll work the time out, that sort of thing. But we want to have we're working backwards from the deadlines of selection. So we have enough time to print the awards, invite the attendees, to make sure that they're actually going to be at the conference for the 17th. So we need 3 people. So if you're interested in joining that or being a presenter at the conference, you can speak to me or Jess at the end of the meeting, or you can volunteer yourself now, but no pressure. We're here for a little while longer. So
I'm
might have fallen in the wrong pool.
I forget, Commissioner Pattis helped with the award ceremony last year, which was great. Donnelly Loso was a presenter talking about all things community action. So it really is an all volunteer effort. It was great.
Any questions, anybody? They all did a great job last year, and we'll see if they're up to par this year.
Two years in a row. 2G state plan session. So we're going to talk a little bit more about how we've been moving along since we met in March. We've had a lot of audits and whatnot. So this is kind of explaining why we're hoping to do some of these board involvement sessions ahead of this meeting, but that, frankly, between contract audits and everything else in between, didn't get there. So we will be sending out to the board on June 17th at 4 o'clock p.m. and June 24th at 4 o'clock p.m. invitations to have some conversations about these, the state plan planning process as was identified in the last board meeting. So that will be the kickoff. So you will, as board members, be getting an email about that in the next day or two, inviting you to that. So if you can't make one of those sessions, we can always do stuff offline and whatnot, but we want to be responsive to the board. So another save the date, if you will, for June 17th and June 24th, and we can send out more information to you in the next day or so. And that's a direct result of the conversations at the last board meeting.
Sounds good.
Also, too, you'll see we're on the road. We saw Jim wrapping up in Littleton the other day. Whatever you were eating looked great. We almost invited ourselves. Was that?
We were eating?
Yeah, it's going to happen. But we're working our way through our public comment sessions. You'll see we're very lucky to find all three locations, including at NHGS quite a bit. Thank you, Commissioner Donnelly and CAP HR. We have a few more to go, with tomorrow being up in Laconia. But we're trying to complete our public comment sessions. Our written comment period is through the month of July. So we have historically not received much. And so, yeah, that's, any questions about that?
Rick Bartle, how well attended for this?
They have historically been not well attended at all. We put it on our website, NHES. We put an ad in the Union Leader. Frankly, we get the written comment. That's what we get from the public comment is a requirement on the state federal side that we provide people the opportunity. And the stuff that we work with isn't controversial. It doesn't bring in special interests. It's not like you're building a highway and there's environmental concerns or whatnot. There's, and Donnelly and Commissioner, you've been doing this for longer than I have.
I guess I would just add that I think it's important to have the opportunity for public comment, but people that aren't in the weeds in this work, like Joe said, people are just happy that we have a work plan and that we're caring about this issue, and I think we have more feedback from the businesses we work with outside of these times. So, I think I attended the last state planning, I think I went to three public sessions, and if there was more than a handful, I'd show.
And we're going to be doing focus groups with actual frontline staff, so that is separate from the public comment session. So we invite frontline staff, the folks that you saw here sitting behind, practitioners to talk about what we can do better, what's the plan. So it's all little parts of the larger outreach. So to speak.
Yep. Yeah.
Item 2H is an audit update. We have had a fun year of audits against the Director Joe Dorian. We have three. So I don't want to read everything in here. We went through the single state audit. That was supposed to be a two-week process. It became a two-month process, kind of like Gilligan's Island, a three-hour tour turned into how many seasons on television. So we only had one finding, and it was just an issue on reporting, which was quickly rectified. We actually took a training on it and got everything. So we finished that. That's the FFATA, which stands for the Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act. We had new staff transition. It just fell off the work plan. We got back on, and so that was that. And then we had the Senior Community Service Employment Program, or CSEP. It's a program that falls under board purview, and they were with us for a whole week. And despite their best efforts, they found nothing. So we were very happy to wish them well on the way out. And then last but not least, we have the Consolidated Compliance Review, or CCR. They say it's not an audit, but friends, it's an audit. It's like, you know, so that is what it is. I know. And the feds do listen and read our stuff, too. So they're great.
For the record, that is what.
So for the board, new board members, just a reminder, we go through this every 3 years. So actually back up to the single state audit, I think they're going to do again next year. I think we lost the coin toss, so we're going to see them again. And I think CSEP as well is coming back next year because they want to. Great. And so the Consolidated Compliance Review is different. It's once every 3 years because we're considered low risk. We're a low risk. Other states see the U.S. Department of Labor yearly. You know, if they're high risk for 2 years, we are on the as little of a review as possible. That's the best you can get, 3 years, kind of the gold standard, if you will. So that triennial occurrence will happen again in 2028. Very much looking forward to that. At the time of writing the report, we didn't have the findings. We met with them on Friday morning. And I shouldn't say this, but we try to have a little fun here. We did kind of take a little bit of a office guess, if you will, of how many we would get. And I want to say that I was victorious. We had three. We had only had three, down from seven previously. And in comparison to other states and territories like Puerto Rico, that gets 34. So I just want to show kind of how the spectrum, if you will. So we only had three findings, one of them that we have already addressed, and two that we think are silly, but we will work through them because we're always willing to focus on continuous improvement. So we only had three findings this year, over 850 documents, 2 weeks of meetings. We got through it, so thank you to our partners, too, at Employment Security. You were also part of that. I know Sarah and I, we were spending a lot of time together. But happy to answer any questions. Sorry, that was a long kind of update, but that's been our life the past few months.
Since January.
and that's, of course, this is Melissa Carter's first time going through, so she hasn't quit yet, so that's happy to entertain any questions. Excuse me for being a little punchy.
Questions? Anybody?
And we'll update the board too on what those three findings are for transparency. It'll be an informational item in October what we're doing to address those other two. One's actually going to be grants management that we're actually really excited. It's a new grants management software, so it's going to help. Item 2I is per the requirements of the board funds that we have. These are non-state, non-federal funds in a dedicated fund. So whenever we access those, the process is to provide a memorandum to the chair for approval, or I'm sorry, for consideration. And if that individual approves, then so you'll see it was for some staff training. And so that is item 2I. Are there any questions on that?
Seeing none, again, for the record, this is George Dallas. Can we move on to the board motions and discussions?
Yep, Mr. Chairman, if we could, maybe we'll come back to 3A if we could and go to 3C. If that's okay.
Jim, do you have a business that has an issue with that?
Go ahead. Just because I know I think a few folks, I think one had to leave, but sure. So I want to try to get through anything that we may have to. So we try the best, so we're working with the New Hampshire Audubon, so the folks here, for the next year of meetings. So we wanted to run these dates by folks. If we're unable to secure the dates, we're going to try to move it the week prior or before, that sort of thing, on that Tuesday. But we wanted to get a board approval on these dates for the next calendar year here at New Hampshire Audubon, part of our annual selection of the meeting dates for the next year. And we'll send out, once we lock down the contract, the firm dates and location.
Everybody okay with that?
Do I have to make a motion then? Make a motion to accept the draft motion? The proposed dates.
I'm second it.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Jim with the motion.
Jim approved.
And second with Mike Albert.
Yeah.
Three D is a little bit of a typo. Sorry. So fast fingers there. It's actually not the dislocated worker contract. It's the adult contract. So periodically we have to procure the different programs that we have. So the WIOA adult program, currently administered by CAFHR, Community Action Program of Hillsborough and Rockingham Counties. The adult program went out to bid. We formed a review committee. I was hoping to get Shane before he left, and Kelly Clark was not here today to talk about that, but he had to leave, unfortunately. So we did have two submitted proposals, one from the Community Action Program of Hillsborough and Rockingham County that once scored. The scoring committee was myself, Kelly Clark, and Shane Long. Scored an average of 94.68. Another provider, Unique System Skills LLC, submitted a proposal, and it received an average score of 55.68. We have an item going before the Governor and Executive Council tomorrow for a four-year contract, the Community Action Partnership of Hillsborough and Rockingham Counties, and we are looking for a draft motion to approve the recommendations of the review committee, which selected CAFHR.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? If not, motion moved and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Jim, you
yes.
know that I abstain from the
on this side.
Thank you.
Was it Tracy with the second? Thank you. Sorry. And we're looking at, and we'll brief the board. It's going to the Executive Council tomorrow, so we're fingers crossed that everything works out just fine. Item 3E is the, and that was for a four-year contract too. I think I mentioned four-year contract. So 3E is the New Hampshire Works Conference. So last year, we didn't know how much it was going to cost because we had not done it in years. We operated on a very efficient budget. The biggest cost, or really the only cost we have other than like some folders and pens and some minor printing, is food. We do provide breakfast and lunch. It's kind of a sad box lunch. People hated the box lunch, but
it's a real pitch.
So please come and be sad with a sad box lunch. Coffee's great there, though. So we had 180 attendees. We have identified a source for the food, but we want a backup plan if in case that funding source is not available, because we will not be meeting as a board until a few weeks prior to the New Hampshire Works Conference. So we're asking for approval of up to $5,000. I believe last time we had board approval up to $12,000. We came nowhere near that. I think we got to like $3,800 between food printing and folders. We are very cheap. We had folders left over from last year. And actually, I'm looking at a few of the people that were collecting the folders. We're actually just ripping off a sticker and putting on new. So we're very frugal, very frugal. So we're asking for the board for $5,000 to execute the New Hampshire Works conference. And I don't want to, that person that is providing food, want to mention or?
Oh, I'm happy to.
Okay.
Donnelly also. So one of the opportunities that we have as partners is our community services block grant funding, which they like us to use to leverage other dollars. And so we have offered to use those dollars to cover the food at the conference, the good use of those funds. However, the CSBG was zeroed out in the current budget that has been presented to Congress, which is why it's good to have a backup plan. We're relatively hopeful that Congress will fund the community services block grant again based on support that we have seen across both sides of the aisle. So, but just in case, don't be suspended on that thing.
Second. Any discussion? Chase.
Yes, Chase Hagerman for the record. I think the reason we had 12,000 last time was just to be extra safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is 5,000 the extra safe number?
Yeah, okay. So a great question. So we're really fortunate. I wish Shannon, every time I talk about this, Shannon is here. Shannon Reed is on the board, represents the community college system. They're providing the venue for free at NHTI, including their big auditorium, the student center, lobby, multiple breakout session rooms, AV that works, actually, really good, microphone, everything. They took really good care of us, all for free.
IT support,
everything. They were phenomenal. So, free. So the only real cost there is food, which talking with Stan, who runs the food service, you know, price and costs have gone up a little bit. Of course, we all feel it, but, you know, we think confidently 5,000 should be. And if not, I can afford to skip a meal, so.
All right. Is there a culinary program get involved in food?
So they don't have, great question, they don't have a, so we kind of picked, we picked a community college without a culinary program, unfortunately. We thought about actually moving it up to Lakes Region and doing it, but they just didn't have the venue for it, that sort of thing. So we were trying to think of, and the food up there is really good too, yeah. Lakes Region. So, yeah.
Right.
But if we get sick, they have a great medical program, or if I chip a tooth, the dental program's right there.
Thank you.
Don't chip a tooth on the food,
hopefully. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, we
could talk. Any other questions? If not, is a motion on the floor, duly seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And the last item we have for the board is item 3F. So we will frequent, and that's where I was spacing and but dislocated workers twice apparently, so apologies for that. Item 3F is to move $150 in unused rapid response. $150,000. I'm sorry. What did I say? We're gonna pass a hat. Goodness. Oh, forgive me. So we would like to transfer $150,000. Of unused rapid response dollars. Why they're unused, so we have, well, we run an efficient program. We did have some staff transitions, so when staff are not in the position, so when Jimmy left, there was a little bit of gap, when other folks have transitioned out of service. So we find ourselves with additional funds that we have unspent that can be confidently moved. The WIOA legislation allows for money to be moved between adult and dislocated worker. We'll frequently do that. We've moved money to adults from dislocated worker and dislocated worker to adult, vice versa. You can't move it from youth. That's in the law. Don't know why. But so we would like to transfer $150,000 from the rapid response funds to the dislocated worker program. They have, despite having some of the lowest unemployment in the country, our program is exceeding enrollment goals and really firing on all cylinders. So we're really tight on funds, as Melissa mentioned, in the we're keeping an eye on it, but we don't want the money to cycle back to the Fed, so this is a preemptive measure to help do that. Happy to answer any questions about the $150,000, not $150.
Question 6, so moved.
Move.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? One abstention.
Okay, one abstention. And then the second is Larry Major?
Yep.
And Mr. Chairman, that concludes what we have. Staff, if the board has any motions or discussion.
Anything else anybody else has? If not, this concludes this meeting of the State Workforce Innovation Board. This meeting is recorded. This is not a man compliant with RSA 91A. Please send the recordings and say we can defend it. That's a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Move. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.